Oh, yes. Welcome to the Sixers Talk podcast brought to you by Wilmington University, Wilmu Works. Danny Pommel's here along with our Sixers writer extraordinaire, Noah Levick from NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. Ben Berry, our producer, is in the cut like a Band-Aid on this podcast. A lot of topics to get to. Sixers Media Day has happened. The first day of training camp is in the books. We got a new starting unit, a lot to talk about, but we have a special guest on today's podcast. And we will introduce that guest by playing this soundbite. So have a listen.
Hey, Tyrese. Paul Hudrick, Liberty Ballers. I'm just curious, you know, last year was such a weird process going from the draft to training camp and what you experienced. How much better are you feeling this year with this, you know, mostly normal kind of coming into training camp and being able to hit the ground running?
I'm so sorry, Mr. Paul. I'm just in awe that, you know, this is my first time seeing you in person. I've seen you on the video so many times. Like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, I've seen this man so many times on video. Like, I this is my first time seeing him in person. This is amazing.
Likewise, it is. It's great. It's great to see you.
All right, now let's do that again. I'm sorry. All right.
It's all good.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we welcome Mr. Paul, according to Tyrese Maxey. But this is Paul Hudrick returning to the Sixers Talk podcast. Paul, welcome. We are so happy to have you.
I got to be honest. This is weird. can I say bit. That? Is it okay? It's weird.
That is okay. Everything is fair game here. We want to know how you really feel. So yeah, a little bit, weird. But I'm glad you are dealing with the weirdness. Paul is now the community producer at Liberty Ballers, the mother effing man there, as he was with us as well. So some things don't change. So Paul, I guess the man bun action that you're working with is a little bit of a change, but how weird was that for Tyrese Maxey to say that to you?
It really caught me off guard. It really did. And it's funny because, like, I hadn't even thought about that. Like, the only time I'd seen him in person is when he's playing on the court. Like, I hadn't seen him face to face like that in that setting. So, like, when he said it, and I'm like, wow, we've talked a million times and never seen each other. So it was crazy. It's great, like, the world we live in. And it's just like that totally puts it all in perspective. And I know Noah and I, you know, talked today because we were at training camp today, and just we both had to think about, man, when was the last time we were actually in this gym? And it just makes you think, like, wow, we're like, you almost take it for granted, all the opportunities you get and all the things you do. So yeah, it was really funny. And Tyrese, man, that guy's great. He's such a good kid and one hell of a basketball player that's going to have a pretty big role, it appears.
Noah, what was the room like when Tyrese took his moment to really reflect on the fact that he had never met Paul in person? I'm sure it was pretty funny to you too.
Everyone could relate. Yeah, it's exciting to be in Paul's presence. And yeah, I echo echo the sentiment of just being there. And even if we had masks on, which is actually something that Maxey commented on, he made a joke about, you know, everyone looks very serious with the mask, but just being there in person, the human interaction is something we all sorely missed. I said to Paul, I think the humor, you felt it a little more with the players and the reporters, and you're just able to have interactions that are a little more genuine, even if, let's face it, given the Ben Simmons situation, a lot of these back and forth with players and reporters are very weird nowadays.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Yeah, human interaction is an excellent point. You were there at the practice facility. Paul was there, but Ben Simmons clearly was not, because the cavalcade of questions to each and every person from each and every player. And I think you started off one of your pieces on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com, Noah, by saying just the fact that Ben Simmons not being there was just something that just no one was shy about asking about him not being there. It just was on the tip of everyone's lips. And it's like we have to kind of get through that to get to the basketball stuff. So so much has happened, and we have to recant some of it because we haven't had a podcast since Media Day started, and so much has come from the Simmons camp. I wish we could get Ben actually saying something, he himself, rather than hearing all these reports. But just to recap some of it, most recently, a report coming out today from Sam Amick of The Athletic from Simmons camp saying he doesn't want to play with Joel Embiid ever again. Now, I don't even know why they needed to say that. I guess it was like their rebuttal to maybe the Media Day stuff. But according to that report, he thinks Embiid's style takes away from the driving lanes and Simmons' strengths, and which is such a weird perspective to take. And I guess we can start with that before we get to some of the other stuff, because it is the most recent. But like, they've had the numbers say that they've had great success on the court together. And it's hard to make sense of why they would have that perspective. But do you guys feel like there's merit to that? That the fact that Embiid's presence and his dominance in the paint kind of doesn't give Simmons enough room to blossom and do his thing?
In a word, I'd say no. This is the guy who finished runner-up for MVP in the league. I think most players in the league would kill for the chance to have a player like him on the floor with them who does what he does. And on top of that, we all know Ben Simmons' obvious weakness. We all know, you know, his unwillingness to shoot in his career. We know that that's part of the deal for all the things he does well, that's the glaring weakness. And in Joel Embiid, you have a center that isn't afraid to step out and take threes, that will take mid-range jump shots, that will do some different things. So it rang hollow to me, to be perfectly honest. What I think, and I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit about the other piece that came out today too from Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer, and just to me, it all comes back, because we've heard it all, right, Danny? And right now, like, we've heard, oh, it was Doc Rivers' comments. Oh, it was Joel Embiid's comments. Oh, it was the fact that they tried to trade him for James Harden. Oh, you know, they wanted a trade. It wasn't just to me, it all comes back to this singular idea, and I think O'Connor touched on it, is it seems to me that he wants his own team. He wants to be the guy somewhere else. And as long as he's here, he's never going to be the guy, because Joel Embiid is so great. To me, that's Joel Embiid said the word, and I think it fits. It's disappointing because as everyone has stated, they are better together than they've been apart throughout their career. And this team with Ben Simmons is a legitimate title contender. I still believe that. I really do believe that. And if he came as a better, more improved version, they'd have an even better shot of being a contender, of being in the finals. So just to kind of bring that back full circle, I would say, like, I think there is room for Ben Simmons to be that player, to be have a bigger role, to have it if he wants it, if he takes it. And I think that's the bigger issue. I don't think it's that Joel Embiid clogs the paint. It's that I don't think Ben Simmons, and this is someone who has a great deal of respect for Ben Simmons and his game and what he brings to the table and how great he is defensively and some of the things he does offensively, creating threes, creating opportunities for others. But I think the reason why he hasn't ascended isn't because Joel Embiid is in the paint. It's because Ben Simmons, his game has not evolved the way that I think it should.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the numbers, I believe with the exception of that 2019-20 season where Al Horford's presence had a detrimental effect on that Simmons-Embiid pairing, they've had like a +8 net rating, you know, when those two play together, or much higher this year. I believe it was around 15 or 16. So I feel like I've said this a million times. I don't think there's a fundamental incompatibility there. They're two elite players who've been great together. And you look at when they're healthy, with the exception of 2017-18, when both were very young, they've lost two devastating game sevens in the second round. So I think Joel Embiid's point that it's disappointing we're in this situation because it feels like they just need to take that next step, I think it's a really credible way to look at the situation. But yeah, you can understand Ben Simmons' perspective of, I guess maybe he just wants his own team, or thinks that's a preferable situation for him, to try to give that side as generous a slant as possible. I think it's fair to say that the Sixers haven't always been successful in using him in the best ways. Like, you look at this past season, Dwight Howard as a backup center with Ben Simmons wasn't a good idea. Obviously, 2019-20, Al Horford was bad for both Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, at least in terms of their ability to play together. Him and, you know, Simmons were actually pretty good together. So throughout Simmons's 4 years, things haven't always been perfect in terms of how the Sixers have constructed things, but they've tried. They've understood that he has these really prominent strengths as a transition playmaker, as a versatile defender, and as someone who's multi-talented but doesn't do this one rather simple part of the game at a high level. And the fact that the Sixers haven't advanced beyond the second round, a lot of that falls on him not being good enough in those second rounds. To me, that's just the bottom line in trying to assess this. So yeah, I think it's hard to argue with Joel Embiid's assessment that it's disappointing we're here. And as Paul said, we'd love to hear Ben Simmons actually give his insight on some of this, as opposed to hearing it through these reports about what his camp thinks. But alas, here we are.
It just seems like they are just, Simmons camp specifically, are just throwing anything at the wall to see what sticks. I mean, guys are trying to come out and to convince him to come back to the team who he is contractually obligated to play for, but doesn't want to. And he rebuffs them there. A report comes out that he doesn't want to play in front of the Philadelphia fans even. And for my money, the release of the Swish Cultures video is like, the timing of it is like a way to rub in the face of people saying, you know what, this is what I'm taking to another team, even though we all have seen those videos ad nauseum and none of it has portrayed itself onto the basketball court. I sense a little bit of desperation with the way these reports are coming out and the from Simmons camp, because it just feels, I see you nodding your head, Paul, just feels really like they're trying to continue to sway the opinion or public perception to their side, when it just continues to seem like they're just grasping at straws. You feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of already said it off the top, where it just feels like every time something comes out about the Sixers and them not being willing to trade him, that, you know, Ben Simmons camp, something else comes out about why he wants out. And I mean, from what the people I've talked to, from what I understand within the organization, yeah, man, they're not trading him. It's just not going to happen anytime soon for a few different reasons. One, Daryl Morey said it at media day, and this is what I've been told too, is, you know, that draft meeting, the draft combine meeting in Chicago, that wasn't amicable. Ben Simmons' camp asked for a trade. The Sixers said, okay, we don't want to trade him, but we'll look into it. And that's where that kind of took off. So, like, first of all, the Sixers have really never had an appetite to trade him, other than the James Harden stuff, which, again, that was more about trading for James Harden as opposed to looking to trade Ben Simmons. I think there's a big distinction to make there. They're trying to trade for one of the greatest offensive players ever. They're not trying to trade Ben Simmons. But, and on top of that, I just – you know, throughout the summer, the Sixers explored it. They didn't find the value they wanted. So they said, okay, like, here we are. And if you're them, like, why are you going to take poor value or something you perceive as not as good of a value? Like, when you hold the cards, like, he's here for four more years. the Sixers hold all the leverage. Like if Ben Simmons is going to sit out for an entire season, like I kind of don't see a reason why the Sixers won't just let him. I don't think they're going to trade him just to do it. I think they're going to hang on to him. And look, could it get messier? Sure. Could these kind of reports keep coming out? Could you know? Yeah, like that's probably going to keep happening. But until they get a trade, until there is a player that that they think is worth that value, they're not going to move him. And then on top of that, like right now, everybody loves their team right now. It's training camp. The Bulls think they're a top four seed. They're probably not going to be, but they think they are because they signed Lonzo Ball, because they had a signing trade for DeMar DeRozan. The Wizards probably think they're better than they were last year because they got Spencer Dinwiddie, made that big trade with the Lakers, got KCP and Kuzma and Harrell. Like, so many teams are Portland with Damian Lillard. They made a huge trade to get Larry Nance, who I think is one of the more underrated players in the league. Does it make them a championship team? Probably not. But it's enough to make Damian Lillard buy in for a little bit and want to hang around. So I just, everything, the timing's not right. The what's out there, the compensation wise is not right. It's just, so I think this is a stalemate. I don't think anything changes for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. I mean, we've discussed it before, Danny and I, you almost sense that the Sixers would love for something to go downhill, whether it's in Chicago, something disastrous where Zach LaVine becomes on the table, or Damian Lillard, the Chauncey Billups hire, really, you know, does not go well when this regular season begins. Something along those lines. But yeah, outside of that, it sure seems like we're in a holding pattern for the time being. And I'll just add also, I think Daryl Morey at Media Day was very intentional about portraying the Sixers as a young team, like a team that's likes its young talent and doesn't feel any urgent need to make a desperate trade. So, and it is true, the longer they wait, the higher the odds that another team becomes a feasible trade partner and another team does give the Sixers something closer to what they're looking for. But as I'm sure we'll get into also, it's going to be fascinating to see if the Sixers begin the season with Simmons, you know, still stubborn here, exactly how Tyrese Maxey does fare as a starting point guard. If a 20-year-old kid is brilliant and is this special player that Doc Rivers thinks he is and that Danny Green thinks he is, then I think the Sixers position does become a little bit stronger because it's all right. Things are going fine here. We were the number one seed in the East last season, and our 20-year-old kid who we picked in the early 20s in the draft is killing it. We don't feel any dire need to make any moves. So that would probably be an ideal scenario for the Sixers, assuming things hold steady in terms of them not receiving any offers that they love.
Yeah, great segue, Noah, because onward and upward seems to be the order of the day for the 76ers. You alluded to it, but the Sixers respond by having Maxey running the point with the first team here on the first day of camp. Doc Rivers saying that was how things went the entire day. Players are saying they're disappointed in the circumstances. But as Doc says, he's going to use multiple players to push the ball up the floor. Where getting it to Ben used to be the priority. He's not here, so it may be Tobias gets it, he's going to push it up the floor. If Maxey or Curry get the ball, that they're going to do the same. It's interesting because Doc alluded to the fact that throughout the whole summer, they hadn't met together to talk about the Simmons situation. And then they had this meeting with the entire group to kind of air out how everybody feels and whatnot. And just from the words that came out of the player's mouth, the disappointing thing, you know, Tobias Harris said it, Joel Embiid said it, seems to be how everyone's feeling, just disappointed in the circumstances. It's curious for me, though, that with the Simmons situation, Morey is here, you know, kind of holding the cards. But if the things do go according to plan where Maxey fits in and, you know, they're able to run him with the first unit, they do take a gigantic step back without Ben defensively. So even with Ben not being here, his presence is still felt on the court and off of it, because off of it, because of the questions, and every city they go to, they're going to get some type of, you know, roundabout, you know, inquiry about that. But on the court, they lose his defensiveness and the playmaking ability might be made up somewhat. Are the Sixers even going to be close to a contender or one seed like they were last season? Should fans expect them to be the type of team that can get past the second round of the playoffs as currently constructed?
That's a tough one. I mean, they're going to be good. I mean, like, they're still, if this is the way it goes and Tyrese Maxey is your starting point guard and everything else stays the same, this is still going to be a pretty damn good basketball team. You still have Joel Embiid.
Now, let's quantify that. Are you now, we got the Bucks and Nets probably as the toast of the division.
Clearly,
you
yes.
talked about Chicago, Miami. You know, I'm not going to mention Washington. The Sixers, you would assume, would be in that mix, but they're definitely a tier below those top teams, you would say.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Right. Especially without Ben Simmons. I would listen, even with Ben Simmons as the same version of the player he was before, I still would have said they are clearly third behind the Nets and the Bucks. Without Ben Simmons, it gets a little murkier. Are they better than the Heat? I don't know. I'm curious to see what the Heat look like. They had a very flashy offseason. Is it going to be a very good one? We'll see. You know, the Celtics, did the Celtics get that much better? Maybe a little better. I don't know. You know, I wouldn't say they got significantly better, but they have two very good young wing players who are still very much ascending, who are incredibly talented. So, you know, those teams, they're definitely going to be in the mix. Like, yeah, Chicago is going to be, you know, they're going to be in the mix. Are they, again, are they better than the Sixers as they're constructed? I would say no. I don't think so. To me, as they're constructed right now, if let's say Ben Simmons just doesn't play the whole season and they don't do anything else, I'd say they're a top five team in the East. I do believe that. I think they're at least a top five team. So that gets you, so you avoid the play-in game. And listen, theoretically, Ben Simmons does sit out the entire season, they don't find a trade at all, Daryl Morey's not going to sit on his hands at the deadline. He's still going to do something to try to help improve this team one way or another. So this team won't look the same as it does right now. But listen, I love Tyrese Maxey. I tend to agree with Danny Green. I think he's special. I think he has a chance to be a special player, because on top of what we've already seen from him from a talent standpoint, there is nobody on this team that works harder. I mean, anyone you ask in the Sixers organization will tell you that. Nobody works harder than Tyrese Maxey. And he's so coachable. He's already improved so much from the player we saw at the beginning of last year till now. He's already drastically improved. And, you know, you're right, Danny, defensively, they're going to take a hit. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I like Maxey's defensive potential. I think he's got great length. I think, and again, I think that he's got the attitude and the mindset for it, but he's still got a ways to go to get to at any type of kind of high level. So him and Seth Curry, that's a troublesome backcourt. Like, there's no two ways about it. Defensively, that is. Offensively, I kind of think they'll be okay, because I think what Maxey gives them as a creator, you know, maybe not a creator for others, but a creator for himself, I think will be huge. I think Seth Curry is going to be able to help him with the ball handling duties a little bit. And again, you still have Joel Embiid and Tobias Harris, who, you know, Joel Embiid is one of the best players on the planet. Tobias Harris, you could argue, was an all-star snub. That's, you know, but between the two of them, I mean, that's what, like 50 points a game right there with just those two guys. So, I mean, it certainly hurts them. They would be a better team with Ben Simmons. Anyone who thinks otherwise is crazy. But I still think right now they are still a top five team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think a team that plays the whole year without Simmons, probably 3 through 5, are the likeliest outcomes. And there are also worlds in which maybe they finish 1 or 2 if things implode in Brooklyn or Milwaukee suffers a key injury, and there's you know, a scenario in which they're below 5 in the East. But I think most likely would be 3 through 5. I think the defensive absence, you know, would be quite concerning. You look at the first unit, which is a very small backcourt, but then even the second unit, there are always going to be questions about Furkan Korkmaz, George Niang. I think ideally the Sixers see him as a guy who can maybe guard 3 through 5, but I'm skeptical of his ability to guard threes and quicker fours and stronger fives, even though he's put a lot of work in on that side of the ball and was someone who was reliable enough to play every game for Utah last year. So, and then, you know, Andre Drummond, a lot of the same concerns that were present with Dwight Howard are also there with him, as far as can he actually like be a playoff player, someone who doesn't commit momentum changing turnovers, which is something Doc Rivers brought up as problematic today. Someone who makes enough free throws. I don't know, maybe that's 60%, which he did last year, which was his career best, I believe. You know, someone who, you know, is not a ball stopper offensively, which has been an issue for Drummond in the past. So there are some concerns with the roster without Simmons. And I think it's undeniable that he was an integral player. I think for Maxey, it would be huge if, one, he shoots pull-up threes the way he teased that he's going to this season in those couple of enticing summer league performances. And then also, if he takes a small step up in percentage, it was at 30% last year. He's at 34 or 35. That's very significant for the Sixers. Joel Embiid actually talked about the desire for the team as a whole to shoot more threes and that he feels a personal responsibility to play a part in that. This was a bottom five team in three-point frequency last year, and especially in a situation where Ben Simmons, who created so many of those threes, is not on the team. I wonder how they're going to make improvements there. Maybe one avenue is Embiid taking a few more. Maybe another is Tobias Harris taking more threes off the dribble, which is something he noted he intends to do this season. But, you know, there are flaws here, but the bottom line is still a very, very good basketball team without Ben Simmons. And it's looking more and more likely that we actually see the version of that team. So I know that wouldn't be something that a lot of folks would love, but it would be fascinating. It'd be fascinating to see the layer of it that is the constant reports on what's going on with Simmons. You know, wouldn't be as personally edifying to me, but the basketball stuff would still be really interesting if the Simmons standoff continues.
I know we all know all too well that anytime Joel Embiid can talk himself into more time on the perimeter, he is all about that. The dude swear he's a guard in a center's body. But let's hear from Joel Embiid now on an interesting topic that'll segue into our next segment.
You know, I look at it in a way that, for example, if, you know, I understand, you know, being in trade rumors and all that stuff, like, but that's just part of the business. If I don't know, Golden State came and offered Steph and Clay for me, you think the Sixers would say no to that? They got to say yes to that. I would say yes to that because, I mean, how do you say no to that? So, because that's what they do. They're always going to find ways to get better. So you can't get mad at that. It's just the way it is. So I look at it in a way that, you know, you just got to move on and, you know, you just got to be, you know, you just got to be yourself and, you know, do the best job you can because, you know, that's, we get paid to do all, and we get paid a lot of money. You know, a lot of people don't make, you know, this type of money, but I just feel like it is a business. It's unfortunate to be in that situation. Personally, I never really gone through it except probably 2 years ago when the whole city wanted me to get traded, even though, you know, you got stuff going off off the court and stuff, but, you know, people don't really look at you as a human being, and, you know, that's not fair. But at the end of the day, you know, you just gotta take care of your business. You gotta do what you gotta do based on, you know, what you get paid for. Yeah, but like I said at the beginning, it is unfortunate. I would not like to be in that situation. But then again, it is a business.
Hey, man, that is your MVP runner-up, just telling it like it is. And I just it's so weird that a guy like Joel Embiid can understand how to relate to the fans, being open, honest. And, I mean, you know, honesty is relative. I mean, I'm sure he's not telling us everything he's thinking, but he has some candor. He has some – so you feel like he's being forthright with you. But on the flip side, you can barely even hear from Simmons nowadays. Everything's through his camp and, you know, his people and through reporters and varied reporters. I thought was interesting. You get reports from Sharania, Windhorst, Sam Amick. Like, all these people are tapped in to the Simmons camp. But here is Joel Embiid just telling you exactly how he feels. And I wanted to just really harp on the maturity. I mean, Sixers fans, I mean, this is a guy who has, you know, been around us for quite some time, almost a decade of him being here in the Delaware Valley between seasons he hasn't played and seasons that he has. And it just really seems like he gets it. It really seems like he wants to win. I mean, we saw the tears and all the memes that came from the Kawhi Leonard shot in Toronto and how dejected he was afterward and everything else and how much he still holds on to that. It's just so weird that you can have two guys, you know, kind of with this fork in the road where Joel is embracing and even, you know, being honest enough to talk about how it affected him when the people wanted him traded and to relate that to the Simmons situation. And then Ben on the flip side to be so closed and, you know, controlling of what people see and how people feel about him. And, you know, it's just like the diva behavior just doesn't fly here. But it seems like Ben never really wanted to embrace that part of Philadelphia. But it's just, you know, I don't know if that really speaks to, you know, the rumors that they didn't quite get along, where Joel said they probably had their best relationship that they had ever had last season. But it's just two different types of people. And I think just Joel, that soundbite in and of itself, I would take Clay and Steph for Joel. Yes, I would. I would take the Splash Brothers for Joel. He knows that. He understands that. It's part of the business, the trade rumors and such. But somewhere along the way, that rubbed Ben the wrong way. Whatever I feel like it's kind of like a death by a thousand cuts type of thing, where it was a bunch of things that kind of like amounted to the situation we're in now. But I'm sure there were some key points there, particularly the Doc Rivers comments and Joel comments after game 7. But have you guys ever given any thought to that? Just how, you know, we don't know everything, but just when you kind of put it all together, these are two different type of guys. They're just two different individuals that don't quite operate the same way, where Doc Rivers said it, you know, here today after day 1 of training camp. You know, there had been guys who didn't get along forever in NBA history, but figure out a way to play together. But for some reason, I see a difference in these two that it just probably never quite meshed the way that it should have.
It's funny to me, in the time that I've covered them, I've never gotten the sense, and I've never been told by anyone, that they didn't like each other or that they didn't get along. Like, I don't think that was ever really an issue from that standpoint. You are right. And they are very different dudes, and they both have talked about that many, many times. They're different personalities, different kind of guys. But yeah, you could see it last year that they were closer than they'd ever been. You saw them on the bench talking way more, laughing, and just like kind of really embracing the situation of, you know, those two guys being kind of the faces of the franchise. And that's another reason why, to me, it's disappointing, and why I could see why Joel would use that word, because I'm sure he did feel like they were closer than ever last year. And I guess, yeah, from that standpoint, maybe you could see how Ben Simmons could perhaps feel a little betrayed by Joel Embiid's comments, even though I think that's a little bit blown out of proportion, but I could see it. If you just think of it from a human side of things. But what struck me, Danny, is just, you know, for years, he's talked about himself as a leader and being a leader of this basketball team. I think what you're seeing is him really becoming that. I think he is becoming like this. This is like he by saying this, I don't care if this is my team. Like, you know what I mean? I just want to win. But like, that's the kind of thing, a guy who's like, that's his team. That's what he says. Like, you know what I mean? Like that to me is indicative of a leader, that I don't care. I just want to win basketball games. And the fact that he's at that point, and yeah, and the Matt, like, you could just, and Noah sees this too. Like you're around the guy so much and you just see him grow into this person. And it just really is. It's like, even from last year when I thought he really, and I, like, and you know this, Danny, you become a dad, the world changes, right? Like, everything changes for you. So, you know, he went through that last year and you could see how that matured him and how that changed him. And I think even at media day, that was a different guy than even the guy, like, you know what I mean? Like, I just really think every time you see him, he is a more mature version of himself. And I came away really impressed with the way he talked. And he's right. Like, in the NBA, in that industry, trades happen. This is the sport, like the sports world. That's part of the reason why athletes make a lot of money, is because there is a lot of that uncertainty and there is a lot of that going on. So like, that's part of it. And they wanted to trade Ben Simmons for, again, one of the greatest offensive players to ever live. So if you're Ben Simmons, yeah, like, of course, like, should you have been a little uneasy about that? Yeah. Like, yeah, I again, from a human element part of it, I get it. But at some point, I think you just got to drop it. Like, right. It's part of the business. It's the part of the deal. It's part of what you go through. Look at a guy like Tobias Harris, who's been traded a million friggin' times. And he doesn't, you know what I mean? He doesn't hold it against anybody. He uses it as motivation, I'm sure, but he just, you know, lets it go and plays basketball. And for whatever reason, Benson, like you said, they're built differently. And it's just not the way that Ben is built. And for Joel Embiid, I give him so much credit for the maturation we've seen over the years. And the fact that, again, yeah, that this, to me, this is now, I mean, it kind of always has been, but now he's ready for it. And like, this is his team. He is the leader. He is the guy. And I think you see it even like, and as much as this Ben Simmons situation is unpleasant, and as much as they're a better team with him, I wouldn't be surprised if it galvanizes that a little bit. You almost sense like a little bit of a closeness from some of the guys.
Is that because Ben's not there?
I don't
like
think
something
it's
he brought was a distraction, or do you
no,
feel like
not
it's
like
just,
that. I think yeah. just the situation and them knowing that they're going to have to deal with it together. I think in a weird way that's galvanized them. And even like, you know, you saw the Shams report that came out, and you know, all the players kind of verified it, that they were willing to go out there to talk to Ben. Like, that's, again, that's them coming together as a team and saying, let's get our guy back here. Like, you know what I mean? I just think the whole situation in a weird way, and it does happen, like, right? I mean, it happens in all sports where you see something bad happen or something, you know, that's something that teams kind of either sink or swim. And I think that this could be a situation where they actually wind up swimming.
Yeah, the talent does not suggest that they're likely to sink to me. And there are a lot of positive personalities on this team when you look at Maxi and Tobias Harris and Danny Green. There seems to be a good mix of folks who are willing to be blunt and honest, and then who also take joy in their teammates' success. So I think, at least in the regular season, that all profiles very well in a situation where you're missing a star in Ben Simmons. But yeah, I mean, from my perspective on the discussion with Simmons and Embiid, it's exceedingly rare for two star players on any professional sports team to be a perfect personality mesh. You know, it's not a scenario where these folks have to get married. They just have to be compatible enough that they can win basketball games. And as we've said, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid have won a high percentage of those. And the issues have been a couple of high profile playoff failings. So I don't see the relationship as something that is the core issue here. And also, I think you have to realize, like, it's something that we're obviously all very curious about and something that has been very closely scrutinized. So to me, the fact that there's been nothing massive out there about, you know, they had this riff or they had this huge blow up behind the scenes strongly suggests that there is nothing horribly wrong on a personal level. We already talked about the basketball stuff, but just on a personal level, I think that that even at this stage probably continues to be a little bit overblown. But from Joel Embiid's media day, I agree. He was extremely impressive. He continues to evolve as a person. He was a community service, I forget the exact name of the award, but a finalist for that award last year, one of 10 folks in the NBA, has really embraced Philadelphia as his city and is appreciative of his connection with the fan base. And the word that stood out to me from that availability was self-awareness. There are obviously undertones there with Ben Simmons and then the unspoken notion of like, we all have to understand where we didn't get the job done and where our strengths and weaknesses are. But he was also very candid about, I did a lot of things wrong in that series. A lot of this is on my shoulders. I have to be better. We all have to be better. And I think that's a very mature perspective and is the kind of thing where you don't have to proclaim yourself as a leader if you're speaking in that way. And if you're being accountable in that sense, folks are going to want to follow you. So on top of the natural talent, just Joel Embiid as a person continues to look more and more like a leader, which is a great thing for this basketball team, no question.
It is refreshing. The accountability is great. The leadership is remarkable. The talent is transcendent. With all that said, though, there is a bit of an elephant in the room because Joel had a partial meniscus tear last year. He misses games. The Sixers were able to pick up a lot of slack in those games he missed because they had another defensive player of the year candidate, stalwart and Ben Simmons, who might pick up some of that slack, not in the way Joel picks up slack on the court by playing incredible defense and scoring the basketball, but just by being an impact player out there. If Joel misses games now, there is no Ben Simmons. How do the Sixers overcome what, which is inevitable? He's not going to play all 82. How do the Sixers overcome Joel's, the leadership, the words are great, but his impact on the floor when he's not out there is going to be a very sizable hole to make up. Do you feel like the Sixers are prepared for that outcome when that happens?
I think they're better prepared this year than last year.
Because of Andre Drummond.
Yeah. And you know, from what, again, from what I like from people I've talked to, like the idea is, you know, last year they kind of couldn't start Dwight Howard. You know, Doc Rivers really didn't trust him to start him. It didn't go well when he started him. So Drummond, I think they have a little more trust in, and I think like definitely, as Noah already talked about, their deficiencies definitely overlap. Speaking of Drummond and Dwight Howard, but you can make an argument that Drummond is like a clear upgrade for a bunch of different reasons. One is just age. He's just younger. Yeah. He's just, right. I mean, he's just almost a decade younger. So that's a big thing. Mobility. Listen, you're not going to switch 1 through 5 with Andre Drummond on the floor, but you don't have to play like drop pick and roll coverage every single time with Andre Drummond. You can sneak in some blitzes and some other stuff where you couldn't do that with Dwight Howard because he was just too slow and he couldn't do it. Their rebounding numbers, Dwight was a little bit better, but Andre Drummond is one of the best rebounders of the last decade in the NBA. So that's kind of negligible. When you look at their fouls, look at their fouls per 36 minutes. And I think I can't know, you might even know, but like, I think it's almost like 2 fouls less per 36 minutes from Andre Drummond than Dwight Howard. That's huge. That's possessions. Right. Like when Dwight Howard commits an offensive foul and it goes the other way, like that, you're just giving away possessions. So that's two.
You
less.
You don't have the reputation with the referees.
Where Drummond has, I think, a little bit, but just not to the extent that Dwight Howard does, clearly. So, I think those little subtle things. Plus, I was encouraged by Andre Drummond's press conference when he the first time we spoke to him. And he basically said, like, I know my limitations. And I think part of the reason why he was willing to come here on the minimum contract, knowing full well Joel Embiid is here and he's going to be the backup to Joel Embiid, was because he felt like Doc Rivers could get the most out of him. And that part of that is knowing his role and you know, knowing what he does well and what he doesn't. I think he, at this stage of his career, is a better roller and finisher than Dwight Howard. Like, I just, and then the free throws too. I mean, at this point in their careers, you'd have to argue that Andre Drummond, it's slight, but Andre Drummond is a better free throw shooter than Dwight Howard. So, like, I just think all those little things will add up. And then on top of that, you go from Mike Scott to George Niang. George Niang, yes, I agree with Noah. I do worry defensively about him, and he clearly has his limitations there. But compared to Mike Scott, I mean, with all due respect to Mike Scott, who's a hell of a guy and who was so huge for them a couple of years ago in the playoffs, the last 2 years, he has not been the same guy, whether it's injuries or, you know, I know he was banged up, both knees had issues. But you're getting a guy in George Niang who is a clear, to me, upgrade as the backup four. And then all of your young guys are going to, you know, theoretically are going to get better. Matisse Thybulle, Shake Milton, Furkan Korkmaz, Tyrese Maxey. You're counting on all of these guys to take another step forward, and I don't see a reason why any of them wouldn't. So I think because of all of that, you are better equipped to handle Joel Embiid absences than you were previously. But at the same time, of course, without Ben Simmons, it's going to hurt. It's going to sting. But I think that they might be a better team overall with depth and what they have. So I think that will give them a big boost. Like, of course, you'd rather have Ben Simmons. You'd rather have a Defensive Player of the Year candidate in the fold. But in a weird way, I still think they're better equipped as an entire basketball team from a depth standpoint to withstand that.
Yeah, I mean, outside of course, Simmons, perhaps one could point to the coaching. To me, front court depth stood out immediately after game 7 as like, this is one of the reasons this team is not in the Eastern Conference Finals. And Doc Rivers was very frank about, like, he asked Daryl Morey, can we get a real power forward who's not Mike Scott? And Morey didn't see fit to make that happen. We've heard even in these first couple availabilities that Doc Rivers is thrilled to have George Niang on board. George Niang is an NBA player who's under 30 years old. He's coming off a season where he's shot the ball well, over 40% from three. And he's just capable of more than Mike Scott. The catch and shoot is the standout skill. It's what is his bread and butter, but at Iowa State, this was a player who did a little bit of everything, and you still see that in his game. He's just someone who, like Drummond asserts anyway, understands his limitations at this stage of his career and knows how to make a positive impact for a playoff team. You know, Utah was the number one seed in the West. Sixers were the number one team in the East. And he feels, as long as Doc Rivers finds the right ways to use him, like a winning player and like someone who is going to be impactful just because that upgrade over Mike Scott is so significant. I have a lot of thoughts about Andre Drummond, but I think Paul hit on a lot of good points there. I think Doc Rivers seems to envision some sort of mid-career renaissance here for Andre Drummond. He alluded to getting him back to where he was. The fact of the matter is, like, the NBA has changed quite a bit from when Andre Drummond was making All-Star games, and his weaknesses are a lot more pronounced because there just aren't a lot of players who fit that mold anymore of not shooting threes and shooting free throws poorly and turning the ball over a lot, and, you know, all these weaknesses that we've illuminated with Drummond. But yeah, we shouldn't neglect what he does well. I agree that he's capable of filling in at a higher level than Dwight Howard was. And I think it's interesting too, this idea of him stepping into a backup role for the first time since he was a 19-year-old rookie backing up Greg Monroe. I'm curious to see how that angle of it goes, but I sense it actually might go pretty well, in the sense that Drummond, I think, likes like the tussle of the game, like the competitiveness, the physicality, and maybe that's something he can lean into a little more when he's playing in stints as opposed to being relied on to play 35, 40 minutes a game. So I think there are valid reasons for optimism in terms of improving the front court depth and as far as being equipped to do all right in the games Joel Embiid misses. But obviously you're relying a lot on players such as Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris to do a lot of scoring in those situations. And Tobias Harris made a lot of impressive developments last year with the passing, the defense, the low post scoring. Can he take another step forward? It's a big question, remains to be seen.
Definitely just left some things on the table for sure last season, falling short of the 50-40-90, not making an all-star game. So it's definitely incentive for him to get better. I'm sorry, Paul.
No, it's okay. Just to add to what Noah was saying, and like I kind of look at it, you know, look at the success that Tony Bradley had during that stretch. I think we can all agree that, you know, with all due respect to Tony Bradley, who I wouldn't have minded if they had brought him back, Andre Drummond's a more talented player than Tony Bradley. So if you can convince Andre Drummond to do basically play like Tony Bradley did, but again, do it at a, like do it at a higher level. I think there's a big time reason for optimism. It's about like, and I think when, and Noah, you and I, you know, covered the summer league games, you know, remotely, and one of their assistant coaches, Brian Adams, was talking about Paul Reed and the way Paul Reed, just by being a role player, can do great things just by nature of him being so talented. If he just does role player stuff, it'll go well. I think the same for Andre Drummond. I think if he just does his role, if he just does the little things, he's going to score. He's going to get easy baskets. He's going to get rebounds. He's going to block shots. He's going to do all of those things just by virtue of being so talented. If he just does it and has that role player mindset, I think it has a chance to be a really sneaky good signing, especially as a, at a minimum guy. And also another thing to note, you're not wrong, Noah, that it's been like the NBA has clearly changed and his type of player is a dinosaur, so to speak, but he got off to a really good start last year with Cleveland. And then when he got hurt, their season kind of tanked, and that's when things kind of went south. But if you look back, he actually got off to a really good start in Cleveland last year.
And he outplayed Dwight Howard by
his side. Sure did.
In their one matchup. I think that was a game that dropped the Sixers to like 0-4. They started the season very poorly without Embiid, and that was one of the losses, and Drummond put up huge numbers in that game. But Paul Reed, I think, is someone worth mentioning here if we're looking for sources of optimism. He believes or he aspires to be in the Rising Stars game this year, as well as to help the Sixers win a championship and to shoot 45% or better from three. So if he is in the Rising Stars game, the picture for the Sixers looks a lot different. And hey, he's hit his goals so far early in his NBA career. Can't do better than G League MVP and earning an NBA contract as a rookie. He was picked in the 50s. So we won't count him out. We'll see what happens. And if all those things come to fruition and B-ball Paul is that good for the Sixers in year two, that's massive.
And if we're ranking Pauls, it will probably be like Paul Simon, Mr. Paul, and then B-ball Paul. Like that would be the order. Of course, Mr. Paul being our Paul Hudrick.
Yep, B-ball Paul. Yeah, he's looking up at Mr. Paul. So we'll see.
Now everyone relax. Everyone relax. Paul Bettany. I mean, come on, God has vision. Let's come on,
bro. A stone in your head is overrated. It's severely overrated.
Ready to make a move? A Wilmington University education can take you where you want to go. WilmU works online or in person. Learn more at wilmu.edu.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Talking Paul Reed is a great segue into our next segment because I want to touch on the second unit. We don't have to spend a whole lot of time on it, but players coming to camp with lofty expectations, goals, things they want to achieve. I can remember Josh Richardson coming with a lot of things at Media Day that he wanted to do, and none of those things quite came to fruition. We talked about a quick second to 50-40-90 with Tobias Harris, a goal of his that he had before the season didn't quite come to fruition. Here we are with Shake Milton. He wants to be in the closing lineup, guys. An excellent goal and something you want to have as, I guess we can call him the second string point guard at this point. I mean, you would assume he's going to run the offense if Curry and Maxey are on the bench. If Shake Milton is in the closing lineup, who is not in the closing lineup is my question.
That's a tricky one. I mean, it could vary game to game.
So could he
comes to fruition.
Right. Is he kind of biting off more than he can chew, so to speak?
No. Listen, first of all, I'm the type of person who, like shoot your shot, man. Like aim for the stars. Like, seriously, like why limit yourself? Go for it all. Be Paul Reed and think you're going to go to the Rising Stars Challenge. Like, that's awesome. I think that's great. Like, why shouldn't you have that mentality in anything you do, right? And I don't think it's crazy. I mean, look, this is a guy last year going into camp last year. That hype train, man, was out of control. And Doc Rivers
contributed to that.
He was the freak. He was the freaking conductor. Like, he was driving that train. Through the preseason, and then Shake Milton has an unbelievable opener. If you guys remember against Washington, he was outstanding. Played great defense too on Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal, and I think he had like 20 plus points. He was just inconsistent last year. The shot really let him down, which is something that I was surprised by, because through every level, every level he's played at, the shot has traveled. I mean, he's been a good shooter. He was a good shooter at SMU. He was a good shooter in the G League. He's been a good shooter up until this season. And in the first half of the season, the shot really let him down. I thought the muscle that he added, the strength that he added last year, it definitely helped him.
Shake Milton.
Yeah, that was so funny. And I love it because he doesn't always show that side of himself, Shake. And I love that he kind of let his personality go a little bit because he can be a little guarded sometimes. So I thought that was pretty cool to see him be a little bit, you know, have a little humor, be a little funny. So that was cool. But I thought last year it helped him like get to his spots. I thought it helped him a little bit as a driver and a finisher. He could finish with both hands pretty efficiently, which is something that not every guard in the league can say. He's 6'6". He's got long arms. So he's the kind of like, he's got defensive potential. He's never going to be an all world defender, but he's got some ability on that end. So like, it's not crazy to think that he could be in closing lineups. Whether that's maybe they need a little bit more defense and they decide to maybe not have Seth Curry on the floor or Tyrese Maxey on the floor, cause they could use a little bit more defense. If they need a
Shake
little bit
would
more,
love you mentioning his name with more defense. Shake would love that.
Oh, I know. And he probably, that's like, for me, like guys priding themselves on defense. That's like, how much of the battle is that? Would you say like 75% of it? Like just the
guy
caring.
Well, he knows
that's
going to get him on the floor for a long period of time.
Just the guy caring about defense goes so far. Or a game, or, you know, maybe they need a little bit more shooting and he closes instead of Tyrese Maxey, because maybe Tyrese Maxey doesn't have it that particular night. And I will say, as much as with Doc Rivers sometimes, I thought he was kind of rigid with his rotations and just obsessed with those all bench lineups, and he could just be like that. The one thing I will say about him, he was not afraid. And one thing I would say would kind of be a deficiency of Brett Brown a little bit is Doc Rivers was not afraid to close games with the hot hand. Like, if Shake Milton had a good game, he would close the game. If Matisse Thybulle impacted the game in a big way, he would close with Matisse Thybulle. I don't think Brett Brown always did that. Brett Brown, I think, always kind of leaned towards going back to the starting unit, which I get, because the Sixers, you know, over the last few years have had some of the better starting units in the NBA outside of that, you know, Al Horford, Josh Richardson season. So I think it's not crazy to think that Shake could get opportunities to do it. Are they going to be sustained opportunities? Is he going to get to do it every night? I would lean towards no, but I still like his potential a lot. I still think he could be a really good player. I think he could help this team in a lot of ways. You could always use more shooting. He shoots off the dribble, which we've already talked about how big that is in the NBA nowadays. And you know, with a guy like Andre Drummond setting screens for him, and some Shake and Andre Drummond pick and rolls, I think could be an interesting combination if they can develop that chemistry and find it. So, yeah, I think Shake is right to feel a little optimism. And I think Shake's going to get, and like in a weird way, this Ben Simmons absence could benefit Shake, because maybe Tyrese gets into the starting lineup and Shake Milton, that second unit is his. So, I think all three of us have always been big Shake Milton guys. And I expect the shot to come back, and I think he's going to have a pretty good season. I think he's going to be an improved player.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I know in covering camp and the storylines leading into it, we all want to acknowledge the fair excitement about Maxey, but I don't want to overlook Shake Milton here. I mean, I think he scored about 5 more points per game last year than Tyrese Maxey, and was the Sixers' go-to guy in terms of generating second unit offense for most of the year. I don't think all those positive qualities suddenly disappear. And I think it would be surprising if he doesn't have an improved year from 3-point range. I think he was around 31% last season, which, as Paul noted, is anomalous. If you look at his longer track record, seemed like his shot got flat at times last year. And for whatever reason, he could never find that stroke in a sustained way, but you have to figure that is going to improve. It's kind of tougher to put a finger on, but my sense is, again, covering last season remotely, is that wasn't the easiest thing for him personally. As Paul said, he can be kind of guarded, and at times the Zoom interactions were a little testy when he was being asked time and time again, like, what's up with your shooting slump? Why aren't you shooting the ball better? Maybe just things being a little more normal. Both with the media and in general in his day-to-day life will be beneficial for him. Again, that's more of a gut feel, but that's just kind of the way I saw it as someone who's covered him for a few years and knows his personality a little bit. I will also say I think Paul's points about, you know, closing lineup options with him are good. He closed over Danny Green a few times last year, and I think we talked about this on a previous podcast, Danny. Like, it's not guaranteed that Danny Green, again, shoots over 40% from three on a career high volume and holds his own in star matchups defensively. So if Danny Green does regress a little bit, wouldn't be shocked if Shake Milton takes some of those minutes, including at the end of games this year.
Yeah, totally agree, man. We will all love to see Shake take these gigantic steps forward, simply because we've kind of seen him grow. We've seen him, you know, from kind of a G League player not a lot of people knew a lot about, to a guy that was nicked up frequently and now has an opportunity to really come into his own. And maybe he can be in that Lou Williams role like Doc Rivers alluded to last season. An extra large podcast. We had to get an extra large guest and Paul Hudrick to come on. Paul, I will be remiss if I didn't mention that you have a baby on the way. Congrats, a baby boy at that. How you feeling? Are you excited, nervous? I know your mom is through the roof.
Yeah, she is. I mean, listen, I'm definitely more excited than nervous. I mean, of course I'm nervous because I'm a human being and I'm bringing another human being into this world. So that's nerve wracking. But no, I'm definitely more excited, man. It's so awesome. We did pick a name, which I'm super excited about.
Iverson, right? Iverson?
No, listen, that's,
you tried for it.
My language
that you tried. I know you tried.
We're just so excited. And man,
wait, what's the name?
Miles. You have a name? Miles. Miles is name. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So we're pumped about that name. Love it. Miles James. I think it's Miles James. It's perfect.
MJ. So,
MJ, exactly. And I gotta say, my fiance Carrie, she is an absolute trooper. I don't know how women do it. But she is, whew, she's a trooper, man. While she's still working, still doing her thing, and you know, being pregnant as hell. I don't know how women do it. It's insane. But we're just super pumped, man. We're so over the moon happy and appreciate. I know you both of you guys have been very awesome and congratulatory and supportive. So I appreciate you guys very much as friends, beyond just doing this podcast and being colleagues. You guys are two good people to have around. So I appreciate you guys both.
Thanks, bro. Don't make me cry. Like, relax. Relax here. Hey, he is the mother effing man at Liberty Ballers for a reason. He is Paul Hudrick. Noah Levick for NBC Sports Philadelphia.com. Ben Barry, our producer. We appreciate you joining us here on the Sixers Talk podcast brought to you by Wilmington University. Will you works. We'll see you next time.